Welcome to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast with founders Stan Campbell and Mike Darter. If you're forced to fight the battle for your life, CCW Safe will fight the battle for your future.
All right, welcome back to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast. I'm Mike Darter in Oklahoma City.
I'm Stan Campbell. I'm holding down Los Angeles today.
And Stan, every time I do that, you're like writing down something. So I don't know if I should say Stan Campbell, if you're going to jump in there or what.
I can hear you and I can see you.
Hey, man, how's Mama Mona?
You know what? Mama Mona, I think we discussed this before. That's my mom. She is preparing for shoulder surgery. So she got shoulder surgery coming up on tomorrow.
Oh, man.
So she's in Oklahoma City.
She's here.
Yeah, she's in Oklahoma City. I'll be flying in on Thursday and to check her out with her recovery. But, she's preparing, you know. She's Campbell strong.
She Campbell strong. Man, it was so good to see her in Dallas.
Oh, yeah. She's a sweetheart. She's a sweetheart.
Speaking of sweethearts, we have on the show today Maggie. CCW Maggie from Las Vegas.
Woo-hoo!
Hey, everybody.
Hey, what's the weather like in Vegas?
You know, it's actually really nice. I have the back door open because it was nice and cool this morning. I even turned the AC off.
Wow. Yeah, we usually have a little weather report because Stan gets to brag about L.A. But, now that it's April or May, it's pretty nice here in Oklahoma City, too.
Yeah.
So, what are we going to talk about today?
Today is all about women, Mike. We have a lot of different topics. And, we thought, with the increases in the nation and also in our membership base, we're getting a lot of females to join CCW Safe. And we have to take care of them as well. So this episode is dedicated to women who carry.
Well, and there's been such an explosion. It's actually, I think, been going on for several years within the firearms industry. Is that right, Maggie?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, we're seeing just different crime trends that are happening. We're seeing places where we wouldn't even imagine crime happening on school campuses, home invasions, burglaries, things like that. There's just a new level of evil that has risen its ugly head. And so more and more women are seeing as their own first responders in those situations that now they've had enough and they're going to step up and get some training. So, it's really important to understand that, these are different times. And so there's so many different things that are out there that women can get into.
Absolutely. Hey, Maggie, before we get too deep into topics, let's take a pause and let everybody know who you are and what you do. Let's start there.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me today. As a female defense instructor, I first started out with the mindset that, there's a lot of women who I would see on the range, and they would maybe be with a dad or a brother, boyfriend, husband, so on and so forth. And they just weren't getting the message across or the ability to teach the ladies that I would actually see on the range. And I would just kind of see this often, and I'd actually taken training. A lot of the training that I've actually taken wasn't, from any female instructors, because there really wasn't any in this area. Mm-hmm. I'm originally from Houston, Texas, and kind of grew up in that gun culture. You go from state to state, and the culture is very different across the country. Mm-hmm. Even though we are afforded our Second Amendment rights all across America, as a young girl, I kind of grew up around it. It wasn't really a strange thing for me. Growing up in Houston, Texas, as Maria Magdalena Mordaunt, you be around a lot of Latin culture and things like that, it wasn't really strange for me to be around guns. And I used to rodeo and I did bodybuilding and just staying very athletic. Used to go to the gun range every now and then. Got into a quick little competition one summer. As a young girl at age 12 years old, I was pretty fortunate to be invited out to the King Ranch, which is one of the largest ranches that exists in the world. And the Claybergs actually started a youth hunting program. And being the youngest of my siblings, we were supposed to put in an essay as to why we wanted to hunt. Now, I have older brothers, have two older brothers, but I had four cousins that were all males that lived with us. And so I basically had six older brothers. And so we all put in essays to go hunt at the King Ranch. And my essay won the admission, and my brothers were like really bummed out. And one of the reasons why they said they chose my essay was because it was very genuine, in the sense that my father was a gourmet chef, and I was a daddy's girl. Mm-hmm. And so I put in my essay that I wanted to go and harvest an animal so that I could actually prepare that animal in the kitchen with my father. And being raised very old school, you know, the boys actually sat down first and the ladies sat down last because we served the food. And so I wanted to be one of the first ones at the table with my dad because I actually helped him prep the food. And so that's what got me on the King Ranch to go hunting. And that was my first lesson, like actual lesson, not just go shoot a gun, and learning how to use a firearm in context. So taking that firearm and being able to harvest an animal and that summer and got invited back and just really got some, I was pretty privileged to get some amazing education from some top hunters, through the King Ranch. And that was kind of like my first, excitement with the use of a firearm and the better understanding of what firearms actually do. And so that's kind of where it all started. That's where, that's where I just kind of got into guns and got my first firearm at 19 years old, mm-hmm. a revolver, Lady Smith & Wesson. Living in the big city of Houston, you know, crime happens. And wanted to be able to defend myself, working, going to college, things like that. It just back then, I really understood a woman's right to defend herself against mm-hmm. a potential threat. Should I need to, you know, if I'm forced to do that, even at that age, I was like, yeah, I need to defend myself, living on my own, going to school, working, things like that. Move forward to 15 years ago, I started a fitness company here in Las Vegas called TaylorMade Bodies. It was a thriving business, went into the gym one day to go work out. I slipped and fell and broke my neck.
Oh God.
It was pretty scary. At 37 years old to kind of reinvent myself, mm-hmm. Never thought that I would actually revert back to something that I really enjoyed in my youth. And that was hunting. Mm-hmm. I'd always found the understanding of conservation and things like that. I always had a respect for that and understood it. And the animals, you know, depend on human beings to manage wildlife, but never really thought I'd go back into it deep. When it came into that day that I was at the range and there were some ladies who didn't want to shoot. They were just sitting there watching. And there was an instructor on the range and he just was having a hard time teaching these ladies. And so I just kind of said, hey, you know, I'd like to help out a little bit. I think you're kind of getting it wrong here. You know, forgive me. I'm not, you know, questioning you or anything. I said, but, you know, the way you're showing them is you're just telling them what to do. You're not showing them what to do. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of come from the place of when it comes to physically doing something, we see that 65% of all we learn and retain, we learn by physically doing it. Mm-hmm. And so I was showing these ladies physically taking their hands and molding their hands around the guns and positioning their bodies in a more athletic stance. And because oftentimes when we're afraid of something, we shun from it. We tend to lean back or really not allow ourselves to, use more athleticism and really be all in to be able to use a tool that in this case, they were going to be using this tool that had a level of managed felt recoil, and they needed to get a better understanding of that. And so this guy basically, long story short, says, hey, you should be an instructor. And I said, well, you know, I'm you know, still recovering from this neck injury and things like that. And he goes, well, I'm just saying, you'd be a great instructor. Here's all the things you'd need to do to be able to even teach CCW classes here in Las Vegas. You'd be the only female instructor owning her own company in the state of Nevada. And I was like, really? There's no other female instructors in this town? And he said, no, there's really not. Or even in the state of Nevada, for that matter. And I said, okay, well, I'll think it over. And that guy, every time he would see me, he'd be like, hey, did you go do that? And I was like, no, you know, I'm still recovering from this neck injury, so on and so forth. And so finally, I decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to go and take some training. Mm-hmm. I kind of started out with an organization that's been around since 1871, and that's the NRA. You know, mm-hmm. they had a training program that it's a very basic training program. It's more in line with more sporting for me. It was at least giving me the baseline before I found something else that was more in line with defense. And that was really my passion, was more and more people need to learn how to use a firearm to defend themselves, because there's a huge difference between knowing how to shoot a gun and then knowing how to use a gun to defend yourself.
That's right.
So people have to totally understand that. You know, you have all these different levels of changes that go through the body. And through the training that I learned with ICE training, they have the methodology that they use, as well as West Doss, by the way. West Doss has a great program as well. He trains a lot of law enforcement and military. Mm-hmm. And so I got to learn from so many different instructors like Doug Little, Masad Ayub, Lieutenant Colonel Grossman as well. You know, those are some of my mentors. And mm-hmm. you know, through those different programs, I just really learned, you know, what really works well for women. You know, even the delivery of the information itself, it can't be repelling. You can't repel people. You can't scare people, especially for women, because we are more nurturers. And for us, you know, it takes a certain thing to bring out that anger. And so it's an anger that may potentially push us back and cause us not to be able to learn. So I really kind of wanted to kind of balance out everything and find out what's the best way to deliver this information.
Yes.
Where the name Homeland Personal Protection came from really quickly is I kind of, after doing all of this different training and everything, I had some students actually come out, and they were from Nellis Air Force Base here locally. And they came to take the training with me. And at that point I was just CCW Maggie, kind of using that, which affectionately came from a guy from a club. And he said, yeah, I'm here to take my CCW with Maggie. I guess I'm taking that class with the CCW Maggie. And that kind of clicked, for me. So I was kind of just running under the label CCW Maggie.
Yeah.
But when some of the guys actually came out to train from Nellis Air Force Base, they said, you know, we're just here protecting the freedoms of our homeland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just coming to take our class with you, you know, getting our CCW, because, you know, it kind of saves us money when we go buy more guns. And yeah. I said, oh, okay, cool. That's awesome. And I thought, my homeland. And I thought, you know, even though we have our military, our law enforcement, you know, armed professionals, civilians, mm-hmm. there's a really big difference when it comes to using a firearm in the context of their job.
Yes.
Civilians don't have the job. They're not on the job mm-hmm. when it comes to using a firearm. We're just our own first line of defense, our own first responders for that matter. Mm-hmm. And until the authorities come and, you know, that, and I kind of look at it this way, that theater of war is different. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of coined the phrase Homeland Personal Protection because I'm teaching people how to defend themselves here on our own homeland.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I kind of coined that name of the company, HPP Training, just to kind of shorten it up a little bit because it's a little long.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I really got into it, was there was a need.
Yeah.
I even had men tell me, you know, I'd rather train with you just because they really enjoy the details. I'm a very detail person. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you and like you shared with us, you've had the opportunity to train, you know, many of our service personnel, you know, because you're so close to the base, correct? And then also you you teamed up with your husband. You guys trained together and you worked together. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, we do. Yes.
How was that?
Most definitely. So you ask, how is that? So one of the reasons why my husband got into this was because when I started my company, you know, I guess you could say I was the anomaly. Yeah. Just like that guy, Tony, you know, I'll mention Tony. He's the one who said, Maggie, you should be an instructor. You're really great at it. He said, well, you know, this is going to, you're going to get a lot of attention because you are basically an anomaly. You're like the unicorn. Nobody has ever seen anybody like you. And by the way, I will say this, when I was invited to Camp Pendleton Marine Corps Base, you know, because they'd heard about me and they invited me out there, and that's affectionately, that's what they would call me, the unicorn. Mm-hmm. And so I use that phrase because they're the ones who said that first. I would never even thought about that. One of the reasons why my husband got into this was because after Sandy Hook, there were a lot of school teachers reaching out, and they'd actually heard about me through a small gun shop in downtown Henderson, where I first got my start as an instructor, officially affiliated with a gun shop. And that was Rance Spurlock. Rance Spurlock is actually pretty well known in the hunting community. Mm. And he's just really well known in this town. And so he would tell all his friends, he's kind of like one of the dons of the community. He just kind of pushed it out there. Hey, well, there's this lady. She's got her own training company, Homeland Personal Protection. You guys should give her a call. I literally had 280 phone calls.
Wow.
Holy cow.
And then I had a local senator reach out to me who was up for reelection. And he actually ran his campaign on CCW Maggie. Hey, if you go and take a call, you know, let me show you how much I care about you. I want you guys to better understand that an armed society is a polite society. And he just had this whole campaign, and it was like a wildfire. Yeah. And there I was standing going, I have to qualify, you know, up to almost 500 people who showed up to come and take training with me. And it was just me running my company.
Wow.
And so the way it is in this town, you can only team teach classes with people who are in your organization. It's, you know, I can't mix my company with another company. And so I told my husband, I said, look, there's only a certain level that you can actually help me with. You can help me with paperwork. You can help me set up targets. You can, you know, get your certification as a range safety officer and just make sure everybody's being safe on the range. And so there I am standing in a room full of 50 people at a time, you know, getting these people qualified through the lecture portion. And then on the range, you know, scheduling these classes, I can tell you, I was just really overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of those qualifications were at indoor ranges. And, you know, long story short, I developed a little bit of a high lead level. You know, when you're shooting lead and you're in an indoor area, you tend to, you know, absorb some of that lead. And I started to feel sick and everything. I told my husband, I said, yeah, you're going to need to get your certifications. And so he went through the process. Some of the same instructors that I used, Doug Little, was a guy from Arizona. He took some of his training, and then we both advanced our training and started doing the ICE training as well as training with West Oss. And so ICE training is basically Rob Pincus's program, personal defense network, things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, West Doss has his you know, annual events and things like that. So Ken actually got into that. And so Ken and I have really grown together as a great team, bringing relevant information. You know, if someone says they want to come and take a class and maybe they have more emotional comfort in training with a woman, sure, they'll come and train with me. But we'll let them know, hey, we're team teachers. There's going to be both of us in there. Any questions, comments, concerns that you have? You have, you know, the ears of a woman, the ears of a man that you can speak to. And if the way I explain it doesn't make sense to you, maybe he can do it better. We want to have that safety, comfort, competency, basically, is the understanding that as your instructors, the benefit of anything that we teach should far outweigh the risks.
Yes.
And so that emotional comfort in the class. You see, you know, some guys are more comfortable with training with Ken or with myself, by the way. I've had guys tell me they would rather take a training class with me than they would with a man, because maybe there's not those two chiefs in the rooms or two lions in the den, if you will. And so maybe they feel more comfortable with that. You know, it's all personalities are very different. Trust me, I've met a lot of different personalities in my class.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. I was going to ask also, you know, you being, you know, CCW Saves Women's community advisor, you know, we've known you, what has it been now? 5 years?
It's been more than 5 years, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Time is flying.
It really does.
Yeah, it's like six or 7 years.
Yeah. Six or 7 years,
You've been with us since the beginning, really.
And,
and you know, when I think back at, you know, many of your class, the classes that you run, you talk about CCW Safe. You've actually had some of your trainees have incidents as well. And you talk them into, tell us, you know, maybe one or two of those real quick, maybe one.
So I've had students who, you know, through our training, my husband, Ken, is also in real estate here locally in the state of Nevada. And so we've had a lot of realtors come through our classes, and we've literally had a couple of those groups or a couple of those realtors who have had to use a firearm to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. They were justified in the shooting. There was no legal recourse taken against them. Mm-hmm. They were found justified. And so no civil suit was actually filed or anything like that. But the cool thing is that they were able to reach out to you guys. And one of the great things that they always say is that when you call CCW Safe, they're there.
That's right.
They don't get a recording. They don't have to wait, you know, for a call back or anything like that. They really had that ease of mind, especially in a situation like that where, you know, you are just, the mind is blown. I mean, you just don't know what to think. And the great thing is they were able to reach out to you guys, and you guys were able to handle the situation. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that, you know, when you are out there every day, you know that if you're in a situation, and this is one of the testimonies that I got the other day was this man said, I have four sons, and all of my sons, you know, they've all taken classes with you, that they're all certified through you. But the biggest thing is that we have the confidence. I know that if my sons aren't with me, that they have CCW Safe to back them up. And he said, if you could tell those guys, we just really appreciate it that when we call that you guys answer, that if you have questions about something, that you guys have the knowledge, you know, you have the specialists. That was the word that kind of stuck with me, that they're talking to not just an organization that understands how to go to court and knows how to talk about the laws and how we can use those certain laws to protect ourselves. But the big thing was, is it's a specialist who can better explain what it is. And so it was the why and the knowledge that they got. It's almost like he said, yeah, you know, you really get educated when you call them, when you have these questions and you're like, yeah, you know, I feel really good about that. You know, my husband and I, Ken Ortega, he and I have actually been to one of his properties before, and there were squatters in the building. And we had to draw our firearms. And when the police officers showed up, they said, you know, quite honestly, your training really showed up because you know how to engage someone. And so it kind of made their job easier. I said, yeah, but, you know, still at the end of the day, if I would have actually had to shoot to stop that threat from continuing to present that lethal threat to my husband and I, or my husband do the other, I told the guys, I was like, yeah, you guys heard me talk about, you know, CCW Safe. Cause one of the police officers, by the way, was one of my students. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, the CSI people who showed up were also my students as well. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of like, hey, it's like a reunion here. And so it was like, hey, what's up? You know, cause this is, by the way, Las Vegas people think this is a big town. It's really not. Uh-huh. This is a very small town. It's a big, small town. I like to put it that way. Yeah. But so in that case, you know, I there was no incident. I didn't have to shoot somebody. The police officers showed up and handled the situation. But I have to say that even me personally, having my membership, I was like, yeah, I, totally felt that confidence that even if I would have had to do that, that you guys have that all encompassing of not only having advisors like myself and others through CCW Safe, you know, understanding, you know, surviving the fight, because with great educators through CCW Safe as well, you know, you guys have even more specialists in that psychological survival. That's right. You know, that you guys have specialists who can help your members through that psychological roller coaster of what
shout out to Alexis Artwall, the great doctor.
Dr. Alexis Artwall. That's right. And more affectionately, the way she puts it, that survival triangle.
Right.
You know, and then that legal survival, you know, because you guys are just lifesavers when it comes to having those specialists who understand what it takes to put forth a legal case. And then, you know, one of the biggest things also is that financial survival too. I think there should be like a box conversation, because there is that other wall.
That side, yeah.
There's that other side that we can't, you know, because people are like, whoa, how much is this going to cost me? And what's it going to do to my family and things like that. And so, you know, those are some of the things that I've seen that my students talk about. The biggest thing that comes up, and I will affectionately talk about some of the great things about CCW Safe, but the one question that comes up is, how much does it cost? Yeah. You know, oh yeah, it sounds great, but how much is it going to cost me? And so right then and there, I'm like, hey, it's not going to cost you much, because here's the program. Here are all the different levels, you know, because not every level is for everybody, and not everybody can, you know, really understand, you know, all those different things or have the need for it. So it's the dynamics of it and what I can actually give to my students when it comes to being affiliated with CCW Safe, you know, it's just really, you know, a blessing to me. And for them, it's a huge eye opener of really what's out there and really the direction that, you know, we can put them in so that they feel safer at the end of the day, not just in the class and understanding how to use firearms, but also understanding that they have you guys to turn to for that psychological and legal survival in that dynamic critical incident, that surprising, chaotic, threatening situation to which they are forced. And I love when you guys talk about being forced. You're forced to have to defend yourself. I mean, you didn't look for it, because, you know, if you'd have known something was going on, you wouldn't have gone there. And so that's one of the great things about CCW Safe. Right. I'm just so blessed to know you guys, to have met you guys way back in the day, you know, at the gun show.
That's right. That's right.
Recognize.
Hey, Mike, you want to jump in real quick?
Yeah, I actually was trying to get in earlier. I never heard your backstory when you were young. How old were you when you went on that hunt, when you did that essay?
I was 12 years old.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I never have heard that story of how you got introduced, you know, when you were younger.
Yeah. That's yeah. Cool. My parents, by the way, my parents aren't hunters. They weren't, you know, they actually owned firearms for home defense, and that was about it. But, you know, my parents, they weren't hunters. My dad was a chef. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. She was also a linguist for back in the day. It was Berlitz. Berlitz was remember, you know, I think they make Teddy Berlitz for kids. But Berlitz was a huge company before the Rosetta Stone showed up. Oh. But yeah, my mom spoke 5 different languages. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Awesome. Well, that's cool. Well, we've talked before about, you know, women in firearms, and even, I mean, it's been a few years ago when there was kind of an explosion. I remember some stats, like I know the majority of applicants for concealed carry permits are women. I know there was a stat of 40% of like new or first time gun sales were women. There were women moving into more of a corporate role. And is that the same? Is it still increasing like that?
We're definitely seeing that. When we look at the different stations of individuals who do show up for these classes, I do a lot of private classes for law firms. I'll do a lot of private classes for doctors. Have oncologists showing up. You have company owners, restaurant owners, things like that. I had a huge dental firm actually come, and it was several different dentists who have a business together. And they're like, yeah, you know, people come in here and they're looking for, you know, drugs. They're looking for all different types of things. Yeah. you know, you're seeing even an angry parent who wants to come in the back with their child, and they're like, no, you can't come back here because there's other people back here, and, you know, HIPAA laws and things like that. So we are seeing that you have families. I have a whole medical group family. Here we have St. Rose Hospital. I had some of the CEOs from St. Rose Hospital come out and have some of their nurses come out and their doctors come out. And we had a huge seminar with them and talked about, you know, how do you deal with people in that field? And so having their whole families come out, it just kind of was a spiral effect. You had a lot of corporate people showing up going, hey, I totally understand. You know, when it comes to people who are now cataloging you or following you and people with money and, so we see that now they're talking to people who work for them. And mm-hmm. so you have those corporate people who are now talking to the people that work for them. Hey, you know, you may want to go take some training. You may want to get a better understanding of, you know, the idea of refusing to be a victim and how you can put forth a protection plan, whatever mm-hmm. meets your needs, by the way. Not everybody is going to go straight to the firearm, by the way. And even more, the use of a knife. A knife is very personal. That's a very mm-hmm. up close and personal fight right there. So using a knife is something that takes a lot of skill as well. And so we have subject matter experts in our company who work in all of those different fields. For me personally, my wheelhouse is firearms. And so when it comes to use of firearms, whether it's hunting or personal defense, that's really what I teach. But we also have instructors who teach competition shooting. Mm-hmm. If someone doesn't really, you know, if I meet that person who says, look, I'm not really interested in using a firearm. I want to just learn how to, you know, defend myself physically. Maybe they have that level of athleticism that they can incorporate into a hand-to-hand combat situation. And really, quite honestly, I even teach students, you know, that awareness of how we can use awareness as more of a teaching tool of how to stay away mm-hmm. from bad places, stay mm-hmm. away from bad people. You know, stupid choices make for stupid decisions and stupid things happen. And so when we use awareness, we look at it in more in terms of awareness as a teaching tool of knowing where you're going to and what time you're going to be going there, the potentials that we see that a lot of attacks and crimes happen at night. So if you're going somewhere mm-hmm. at night, be better prepared to survey the area prior to, you know, going into that place, go with someone else. And so I look at that as a great teaching tool, the mindset of, mm-hmm. of understanding, you know, what are your physical abilities? What can you do? Do you have a plan together in sense of if you're training is in line with just home defense, then great. You're prepared to defend yourself in your home. You've got security systems in your house and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. So training can actually be very different based on the context in which you're going to use it for. So when we look at training, you have to look at it more of a holistic approach to it. You know, what has that person been through? Why are mm-hmm. they there?
Right.
You know, what are they capable of? Have they made the decision to use a firearm, and do mm-hmm. they really understand the use of a firearm? So if they're looking to use a tool, maybe in a place that doesn't allow firearms, maybe that state is, you know, you can have a knife on you. And so you better take that knife class. And if you're not comfortable with that, what are some of the physical classes that maybe you should take? We have an instructor who teaches Krav Maga. We have instructors who teach Kung Tao, which is a form of martial arts. So we look at training for defense as more of a holistic approach to what is that person comfortable with and, you know, what do they want to do first?
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about awareness. Awareness is huge. We had last week, we talked with Pat McNamara, and we were talking about, you know, the fact that, and we say it a lot on our show, and it's kind of one of his sayings is just because you have a firearm doesn't mean you're armed. And, you know, awareness is huge because my personal feeling on it is, you know, if you're going to be involved in a shooting, there's a good chance there's going to be a physical portion of it beforehand that you're going to have to deal with. So being in shape, knowing how to, you know, maneuver, move, how to react, how to defend is important. But that awareness is even more important because, you know, Stan and I, we've talked a lot about, and Stan and I both trained at the police academy, you know, things to look out for, physical indicators from other people, you know, pumping the fist, you know, heavy breathing, you know, switching stance, looking around, you know, awareness is huge. If you can stay, like you said, if you can stay away and avoid that situation, you know, that's the best thing. So,
yeah, I really like that. We do talk about in the class, pre-contact cues.
Yeah.
That presence, once you recognize that presence, you're now trying to figure out what is my next step? Where can I go? Mm-hmm. Do I know the area that I'm in? Mm-hmm. Can I go back into the store that just locked its doors? Can I get into my car? Where is my car? Who else is in the area? Can I ask for help? You know, because there's nothing wrong with asking for help. Mm-hmm. The firearm or tool that you decide to use should be that tool of last resort. And you know, I mean, I'm even talking about the stun gun, the pepper spray, you know, the knife, the balisong, whatever tool it is that you choose to use, and have taken training on using that, by the way, should be that tool of last resort. Because if the more we stay away from danger, the safer we are. Mm-hmm. You know, the fight that you don't get into is the one that you survived. You know, you won that fight because you didn't have to get in it, right? Mm-hmm. And so we talk to our students about that. I mean, it's kind of comical but scary sometimes about some of the words that come out of my students' mouths of why they're there and why they want to use a gun. It's kind of scary. That's but right. I tell them, look, we have a moral and ethical responsibility to do something else, to try to find to do something else, to evade that situation, to create space between us and the potential threat, to even put barriers between us and them, like get into the car, get behind a door, find cover, and understand the differences between cover and concealment. Cover is, hey, if something's coming your way, that cover is going to absorb it. Concealment is, hey, they can't see me anymore. That shadow, maybe if I jump into that shadow, they won't see me. Mm-hmm. But if something comes my way, that shadow is definitely not going to protect me.
That's right.
So those are some of the things that students need to kind of wrap their brain around it, especially in the world that we're living in today, and understanding that even if they totally get it in the class, mm-hmm. it's taking that and training and then practicing. It is practicing your training, practicing your understanding. When we talk about understanding, it's understanding information mm-hmm. equals knowledge. Knowledge is power, and you take that power and you implement it whenever necessary, whenever mm-hmm. it's needed. And so that can really apply to so many different things in life.
That's right.
Thing you talked about, you mentioned, where's my car? That's one thing that some people who have never been maybe involved in a physical confrontation, or they've never been put into a situation where they've had critical stress. You know, that is a legitimate question that you may be asking yourself if you're put into a situation, because you're going to be so discombobulated that you can't think right. It's like, you know, when you wake up in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. from a heavy sleep, and you wake up to a noise or to an alarm or something, and you don't know where you're at. You don't know where things are. It takes a minute to settle in. And if somebody hasn't been involved in that, that's why it's so important to always try to avoid, because once you get put into that situation, it's harder to step back, and reaction times and all that. And there's, you know, a lot of people don't, you know, and we see it, we saw it as police officers, you know, in reports, a lot of people who even witness some of these events, that's critical stress to them, not even being involved in it, but just being a witness of it. So that's why it's so important to, you know, avoid at all costs. And that's why we came up with that, the use of force continuum for, you know, citizens.
So, right. Most definitely. You know, there's actually something that I believe, Mike, you sent me an email one time, and there's a saying at the bottom of your email: we do not rise to the level of our expectations, we fall to the level of our training. Yep. And I was like, wow, that is like so true, you know, because if you don't practice consistently, because if we look at defense, let's just say defense as a complete umbrella. If you don't practice something often, because fighting and having to get into altercations is not something that you're everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can even say that armed professionals, can say our military or law enforcement, you guys aren't getting, I mean, those guys, you guys, when, you know, prior to your retirement, you guys weren't like getting into altercations every single day, but at least you guys were being consistent with your training and practicing, mm-hmm. so that if you did have to do it, you wouldn't go into that, oh my gosh, is this really happening? And you're like standing there in shock and trying to figure it out in your brain of what do I do now? And so the way I look at it is learning an automated training, like taking your training and learning these automated different training, like through your training, the automated learned responses to a surprising, chaotic, threatening situation. Now, if you practice that often, it works well with what the body is going to do, you know, automatically. So there's a difference between automatic and automated. So if you can take that and take your training and practice that is more in line with what works well with what the body does naturally. And so we see that things can happen much more efficiently. It's more streamlined. It's more, it flows well with changes of blood flow to the body, whether you go into a shock or if you go into anger, because there's so many different levels of emotion that do show up. And like you said, if you don't practice, if you're not using your training with visualization and practicing visualization when you're shooting that target, you're not looking at the target and going, okay, there's a red circle in the middle and I need to hit that every single time. I use the saying, people get lost in the target, so you should actually be shooting at a blank piece of paper. It's more about your ability to get shot placement and you know, getting good shot placement, going to the range and practicing your fundamentals of how do I use this gun? How do I feel after I use the gun? Or how do I feel after I, you know, take a boxing class? Or how do I feel after I, you know, take that knife class? Or, you know, did I really get my pepper spray out fast enough? Where do I keep it? And so we look at those automated learned responses and apply them to how you, because everybody's different. You know, we all have different strengths. We all have different weaknesses. We all have different mindsets. We all have, you know, life that we've been through that may cause us to respond a certain way based on our experiences. You know, if you're talking about someone who's been beat up, you're talking about someone who's never been beat up in their life. And they're like, whoa, how do I respond to that? I don't know what that feels like. Right. Or the person who says, hey, I've been beat up before. I know what that feels like. And that's not going to happen to me again. And then they respond with anger or fear, by the way. And so, you know, we're dealing with the dynamics of human beings who come from all walks of life. And how do we better prepare those people, everybody encompassing, to be able to now apply a set of skills to be able to survive a potential attacker, whether it's beyond two arms reach or within that two arms reach, the situation. And then, you know, have them continue to understand that even though something has never happened to somebody, it's better to know how to respond to something and have the tools in place and how to implement that, especially during those changes of blood flow to the body and understanding what could potentially happen to you physically, even though it's something that's never happened to you before. So those are the things that we incorporate into our training when we're teaching students and telling them, how do you go practice this? Go practice it like this, right?
Well, it's hard to get that you know, it's hard to create that stress a lot of times, but that's the reason, the reason why I use that quote is because that's the one big lesson I got out of my shooting was, it was all over before I knew it. And, you know, afterwards, you know, a situation happens, you react based on your training, and then you think about it. And it was amazing to me at that time how it all happened. And then afterwards, I was kind of, you know, when we came out of that house, I was kind of like, wow, what just happened? And you have to try to process it. So if you don't have any training, what are you going to fall back on? And that's the big question. And I think you're exactly right. People have to think about that and taking training, you know, just because you take some training, and I saw this in martial arts a lot, just because you take some training doesn't mean you can go and walk into any situation. You have to have a good mind, a good understanding of what your capabilities are. And, but the more you train, the more you can handle. And it is something that's just going to happen, and you're not going to think about it. You're just going to react. And then later on is when the thoughts come in. And I think the real important part is where somebody can get unhealthy is when they obsess on what they did. And I think that's common. I could have done this. Oh, I should have done this and should have done that. And, you know, Dr. Artwell, we mentioned her earlier, with this survival triangle, which we really need to get her on stand, and we need to do a three-part on this, on that survival triangle. But one of the most common physiological effects with police officers is intense second guessing. And we've had members that have had that same thing. And it gets to a point, well, I could have done this, should have done that. And you really have to understand beforehand, you really have to understand the physiological effects that can be present in a shooting. You know, tunnel vision, auditory exclusion, you know, intense second guessing, all this stuff, and especially intense second guessing, because once you are done and law enforcement responds and start asking you questions, that is not the time to let that intense second guessing come into play. Oh, well, I could have should have done this or could have done that, because that's what's really can hurt you in the long run. So, training is, and like you said, it's not just a one part. You know, you have to have a multi-aspect idea or look on your training to encompass a lot of things. What do you think, Stan?
No, so true. And, you know, I mean, you guys covered a lot, but, you know, number one, it's important. You absolutely have to train. And then at the same time, you know, those who have not been involved in anything, that's the importance. We always hit home the importance of actually getting some physical training, because, you know, I think as Mike Tyson said, you know, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And you have to understand, okay, this is what happens when I go through this. I mean, it's not the time to pull the trigger, or maybe it is, but you have to understand and, you know what happens when you get involved in a situation like that. You know, do you need to back away? I mean, we, just like Mike said, we hit it home talking about, you know, avoidance, de-escalation. Those have to be your go-tos, unless it's an ambush situation, of course, and that's not what we're discussing. You know, but you have to be ready to deal with any situation. You know, a lot of people don't think about it's a great time while you're sitting in the indoor range by yourself, you know, when you are, you know, putting bullets down range, and when it's time to reload, you should take the time and mentally go through and even, you know, mouth it to yourself. Try not to look crazy, but go through the motions of saying, okay, I've been involved in the shooting, like the stuff that you would say to 911. Nobody thinks about that, but you're going to respond in the way that you practice. So that's very important to get all that stuff in.
So definitely. So I like to say that we do not take training to survive. We practice our training so that we can implement it to survive.
That's right.
Yes, that's right.
Hey, I wanted to take a sidestep and talk about, because I don't think we covered, you know, What is the go-to firearm for the women that are training with you? And do you have any suggestions on firearms?
So, yes. We look at the firearm, you know, when it comes to, because I get this question all the time. So when someone is looking to purchase a firearm, you know, oftentimes they will go to the gun shop and, you know, it's generally the salesperson behind the counter is usually just a salesperson. They don't really understand that every firearm actually has its use. There are competition guns, there are fun guns, there's just, you know, guns for recreation, there's guns for hunting, so on and so forth. And so when we look at firearms, we want to look at, especially if somebody is getting a firearm for personal defense, the individual has to look at that gun in the sense of, am I going to have it for home defense? Am I going to have it for concealed carry? Am I going to use it for both? And so we look at now hand size, strength, comfort of how comfortable are they with that gun? And then have they even taken any training? We recommend students actually take training first to better understand the type of firearm that they can physically use. And so, you know, the way we look at it is fit. Fit is first. Fit, does it fit in my hand properly? Does it fit in that person's hand properly? Can they reach all the levers and buttons while maintaining a proper one-hand shooting grip? And so when we look at the one-hand shooting grip, we're looking at, you know, bone and barrel alignment, being able to, you know, get their hand around that grip. Is it too big or is it too small? Things like that. So, and then also we look at feel. How does it feel in your hand? You know, is it, are there any areas that don't feel comfortable to you? Maybe your hand is too big for that gun. You know, are you all the way at the bottom when you load the magazine? Are you pinching yourself when you load that magazine? You know, things like that. And then also the feel of, you know, I've got that proper one hand shooting grip. Can I put my finger on the trigger properly? Do I have enough space, or am I having to overreach, you know, to reach the trigger? Do I have to break my grip? Things like that. How does it feel when I shoot it? I tell a lot of students to get out there, go to some gun ranges that allow you to test fire the guns first. You know, how's that manageability of the felt recoil when they shoot it? Go take a class, find an instructor that'll have a lot of different guns for you to shoot. I think it's really important for, you know, to test drive the car before you buy it. Right.
That's right.
So, you know, try on that gun. How does it feel in your hand? How does it feel if you're going to conceal carry it? Can you actually conceal carry that firearm? You know, are you able to, you know, concealability as well as controllability? We kind of look at that as well. You know, being able to access the firearm efficiently from an on-body carry. On-body is my preferred method. I do have classes where I teach people how to draw a firearm safely and securely from a either a containment system, a purse, a backpack, like that. It's important to understand, you know, does that firearm, is that going to work for me and how I'm going to carry it? And then we also look at a budget. It's really important to have a good budget together, because your budget should have the amount of money you're going to need to first purchase the firearm, the ammunition you're going to have to go take training, as well as your defense ammunition, you know, getting, bonded hollow points are really important. You know, we talk about ammunition because ammunition is a part of the system, you know, and using that firearm because it doesn't go bang without it. And so understanding the right type of ammunition that you should be using. One of the things that a lot of law enforcement out here use is a Speer Gold Dot, federal FST. You know, I think even Winchester has a great ammunition. They have the train and defend. You know, your training ammunition has the same felt recoil as your defense ammunition. It's pretty good that they came out with that. You know, when it comes to now that budget, also I have to get gear, you know, holsters. Number one thing that I tell students, hey, before you're going to go buy a gun, put that budget together. And does that budget actually have a safe in it? Because keeping firearms out of the hands of unauthorized users is really important, you know, with home invasions and break-ins and burglaries and things like that. Where are you going to store that firearm? So we look at the budget. So the big question, how do I choose a handgun? well, it's a big conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, does it fit in my hand properly? Am I able to conceal carry it? Or if I'm not going to conceal carry a firearm, you'd be surprised. I have people come and take a CCW class and they're like, well, I'm not going to conceal carry it. I just want to have the option to be able to do so. And I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, cool. And then, 5 years later, they come back and take the class. I'm like, so I haven't seen you in a while. You know, you're conceal carrying a firearm and you should be coming and taking training. Where they're like, well, no, I just got it for home defense. And I'm like, oh, okay. Okay. And they say the last time I shot my gun was the last time I took your class. And I'm like, yeah, wow. It's not good. So, So I say to students all the time, look, I love it if you come and take my CCW class, but talking about the concepts and the laws and things like that and everything we have to talk about in a class, it has to be covered. Mm-hmm. CCW class is not enough because there's a difference between knowing how to shoot a gun and knowing how to use a gun in the context of self-defense, understanding, hey, law enforcement, military, and civilians, the theater of war is different. If you're going to be deployed next week and you took the CCW class and thinking you're going to defend yourself with that handgun, based on the training classes that you took, the law actually applies differently. And so we have to look at that and how we deploy that handgun. So if I'm using a handgun for just home defense, then the size of the gun doesn't really matter. But you should still be able to have it fit and feel good in the hands where you're going to deploy that from and things like that. So long story short, fit, feel, and budget are the little guidelines that I use for choosing a defensive handgun. And where some people do get it wrong is they feel that when they're at that gun counter and they pick up the gun, they're like, hey, this feels really good in my hand. But then they go to the range and they shoot it or they take a class with it and they're like, wow, my gun was malfunctioning and it wasn't cycling properly and things like that. So we look at the different types of handguns out there, and our preferred handgun is the modern striker-fired pistol. You look at the modern striker-fired pistol, it doesn't have levers, buttons, and things like that. It's got that center line. It's got lower bore access. The trigger press is, that 3 to 5 pound trigger press, and some, up to 8 pounds trigger press. Our secondary choice would be a double action only that doesn't have a lot of levers and buttons and things like that. Just because it's consistent in that trigger press, you're not having to second guess like your single action, double action, things like that. So, when I went to Camp Pendleton, I was kind of surprised. I showed up and all the guys were, given the double action, single action pistols with decockers and all kinds of levers and buttons on them and stuff. And, I was seeing malfunction after malfunction after malfunction on the range. And, luckily they've actually changed their duty pistols now, but I was just having an issue. Guys were actually having to fix malfunctions, failure to feed, all kinds of stuff. So, and then also the inconsistency with the double action, single action. So double action, your first heavy trigger press, slide goes back, actuates the hammer, and then it turns into a single action. And so the thing is, you have to look at it from a science-y, biological muscle flexion type of thing. You have empathetic muscle flexion that is introduced into that gun upon that first initial press. Yeah. Now you're really fluxing the muscles to have to press, and boom, you finally get that, and then it turns into a single action, and all those muscles are already introduced. Now you start, your shots start to drop. Because of muscle flexion. And I like to call that wringing in the shots. It's kind of like wringing a towel. You squeeze really hard, and now your shots are going down because of empathetic muscle flexion. And one of the worst guns out there, the most complicated and the most dangerous gun, would be your single action only. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people are probably going to hate me for saying this, but your 1911 style pistols were actually designed and built in the 1800s. That's antiquated method. That's antiquated, design that really doesn't cycle defense ammunition very well because it wasn't designed to do so. And so I know a lot of people, oh gosh, I love my 1911. Trust me, I own 1911s. I think they're beautiful guns. They're fun to shoot. But it's not a gun that I would actually bet my life on.
Yeah.
So your modern striker fire is the best way to go. And if you had to shoot a revolver, a 38 special hammered revolver would be the way to go.
Got you. Cool. Well, I mean, you dropped a lot of gems on us.
We're choosing a defensive handgun.
Oh, wow. I mean, Maggie, calm down with that. So, hey, we're running on about a little bit over an hour. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have to bring you back because we didn't get a chance to talk about Women's Defense Network. So we're going to talk about
let's do that again.
Yeah, we're gonna bring you back, talk about women's, you know, WDN, and then also I saw a recent post of yours. We're gonna talk about firearms and teachers in Florida. So we'll discuss that. So Mike, Maggie, thank you very much for being with us. But Mike normally sends us off.
Yeah. Hey, you can do it, Stan. I got faith in you, man.
I'm not stepping on your toes. Go ahead and fearless leader. Go ahead and exit us out of this podcast.
All right.
Thank you, gentlemen. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Maggie. We'll talk to you soon. Let's get another one scheduled.
All right. Yes.
All right. You guys take care. Be safe.
All right, be safe. Bye, Maggie.
Take care. God bless.
Bye-bye.